There was one here last week. And
kind of surprised because there aren't a lot of classes going on in here. But
it's a longitudinal.
And again, a longitudinal design just means you're collecting data over a period of time. That would, like I said, work here if you wanted to. You can make that work here. So your research design could be a quasi-experimental longitudinal type of design. Oh, perfect. With a longitudinal. I can call it. Longitudinal. So it's longitudinal time series. And there are lots of different ways you could do this type of a longitudinal time series design. One way you might want to do it is you might want to say, we are going to collect data on the obesity rates of these children for people, children who are participating in the program and people who are not participating in the program. You could propose to do that. Compare participants and non-participants. Your participants, obviously, you got their records. The problem is getting the non-participants. Because the non-participants, you don't have records on those people. So what you'd have to do is you'd have to find these households that have these children, you know, and then take a sample of those residents, those households, and use that as your non-participant. So it could get kind of difficult getting your non-participants, but you probably could do it. And so you could say, I'm going to compare participants and non-participants. If you wanted to, you could say, we're just going to look at participants. So we're going to do 12 years of the information on these children who participate in the program. So basically what you'd be doing is comparing their obesity rates before they participated for 6 years versus the obesity rates for 6 years while they're participating in the program. A before and after type of comparison. And that could work as well. But again, my advice to you with the research design is it may be possible to do an experimental type of design with random assignment. Chances are for most of these questions, it's probably going to be a quasi-experimental longitudinal time series. And that usually tends to be what works. But in making the decision whether you're going to do something quasi-experimental or whether you're going to do something experimental, the big question is, can you randomly assign? Can you, as the researcher, decide who participates and who does not participate? And that's the big question right there. Can you decide who participates and who does not participate? Do you have that type of control? If you have that type of control over who participates and who does not participate, you can be experimental. If you don't have that type of control, you're probably going to have to be quasi-experimental. Any questions on the difference between experimental and quasi? Did you encounter this information in your research methods class?
There's
pre-experimental or non-experimental types of designs. Pre-experimental, non-experimental designs shouldn't be used for causation. Now, if you've got a causal research question, don't use it. Yeah, it should be either experimental or quasi-experimental. So, you know, an example of a pre-experimental or non-experimental design could be what we call a one-shot case study. You know, that's, you can't really see any causation with that type of approach. So it should be experimental or quasi-experimental if you have a causal research question. And I would say there's a very good chance you'll have a causal research question. Being the one who writes the questions, the scenarios, there'll probably be a causal research question.
How about the three types of research, descriptive and experimental and explorative research?
Descriptive, causal, and or
Descriptive and explanation.
Explanation and exploratory.
Exploratory. Yes. Anytime you're doing a causal research question, it's explanatory. It's explanation. That's the type of design you should be using. Just a simple descriptive design, again, is not going to be enough to show you causation. Exploratory, you know, sometimes you want to do exploratory research in the very early stages and do non-probability type of sampling, things like that, to save yourself some time and effort. But most of these questions for the comprehensive exam will be oriented around causal. Mm-hmm. And anytime you're doing something causal, you want something explanatory. So that takes us through writing the research question, identifying your variables, identifying the research design. The next thing you need to do is to identify a sampling design. What type of sampling design to use? Sampling is about how you select the cases that you select. So the research design is kind of what you do with the cases when you have them. Do they go into an experimental or into a control group? How are they assigned? Sampling really is how you get those cases to begin with. So how you get that information to begin with, what cases do you use, what subjects do you use, that's what we refer to as sampling. So there are a couple of questions that you'll want to ask yourself first when you're dealing with a scenario like this for sampling. The first question is, do I need sampling? Do I need a sample? There may be some instances where you can use your entire population. And when you talked about sampling in your research class, you probably talked about things like a target population versus a sample. A sample is basically a subset of your target population. So your target population here, you could interpret this scenario as your target population, all the children who are living in the city. So those 75,000 children, that may be what you consider to be your target population. You probably don't have the time or the resources to collect your information from all 75,000 children. So because of those limitations, you're going to have to pick a sample or a subset of those 75,000 children. So let's just say, I'm not going to ask you to, you know, calculate your sample size or anything like that. You don't do any calculations for this at all. But what you're going to have to decide is you're going to have to decide, can I get my information from the entire population or do I need to use a sample? So that's the very first question. If you have a small enough population, you might be able to say, well, I'm going to just use every member of the population and get my information from the population itself. And if so, then you don't really have any sampling that you're going to need to do. Chances are you're probably going to have to do sampling. So here's the situation, 75,000 children. It's probably not realistic to use the entire population. You're going to have to put together a sample of that population, a subset of that population. So when we talk sampling design, what we mean is how are you going to select those children that you're going to deal with in your research? So let's just, again, we're just going to pull numbers out. So if we've got a target population of 75,000, let's just say, and you can approximate your answer, you don't have to give me any hard number, but let's say we're going to put together a sample of, we'll say, 500 children. And we're going to actually collect data from those 500 children. The sampling design is how you decide which 500 children to use. And there are two broad categories of sampling designs you can choose from. There are the probability designs versus the non-probability designs. So probability versus non-probability designs. The big difference between a probability and a non-probability design is in a probability design, you are randomly selecting children to participate. So the selection is random in a probability type of design. So it's random selection. Compare to a non-probability design, which does not use random selection. It uses some other basis for selecting these children. So your next big question answer is, once you've answered, yes, I do have to put together a sample, then your second question is, how do I put that sample together? What sampling design should I use? Should it be a probability design, or should it be a non-probability design? You choose between probability and non-probability based upon what stage of the research you're in and how you want to use these results. So, do you want to generalize your results beyond your sample? So we've got a sample of 500 children. Do we want to take the results we get from those 500 children and generalize those results to our entire population of 75,000? If we want to generalize our results to a larger population, then we would probably want to use a probability design. Because a probability design will give you a better chance of having a representative sample, a sample that represents your population. So if you do want to generalize your results, then you will probably want to use a, no pun intended, probability type of design. Because that will give you the best chance of having a representative type of sample. If you really don't care about generalizing your results, so you're not really concerned about these 75,000 children, you're really only concerned about the children you're dealing with. So you're only concerned about those 500 children. You're not trying to even generalize your results to the other 4,500 kids that are using the program. If you're only concerned about these 500 children, then you might be able to get away with a non-probability type of design. So do you want to generalize your results? That will help you determine probability versus non-probability. Typically, not always, but typically we are often interested in generalizing our results. And your ability to generalize your results from your sample to your target population, that's what's known as external validity. That's what's known as external validity. External validity is the ability to generalize from your sample to your population. You'll have greater external validity with a probability design as opposed to a non-probability design. If you decide that you want a probability design, you do want to generalize your results. Anybody familiar with different types of probability designs that you can choose from? Anybody remember that from research methods?
Non-probability or probability?
Within the probability category, different types of designs. Simple random sampling? Talk about anything like that? They get into those specifics.
Availability or available?
Let's give you a few examples of some of the probability ones. One example is what's called simple random sampling. If you want to have a truly representative sample, a sample that looks like your population, the best way to get that is what's called simple random sampling. In simple random sampling, every case has an equal chance of being selected. So we'll say, let's just say you've got 5,000 children that are participating in this program, and you have access to 5,000 files. You want to take a sample of 500 of those files. in simple random sampling, all 5,000 of those children would have an equal non-zero chance of being selected as part of your sample, of becoming part of that 500 child sample. Everyone has an equal chance. So what you would do in simple random sampling is you would take those 5,000 files, they're, you know, let's just say they're numbered from 1 through 5,000. You would use a random number generator, whether it be a table in a statistics textbook or a computer program, and you would randomly generate a number. And so number 130 is the random number. You take file 130, it becomes part of your sample. Generate another random number. Say it's 1,450. You get file 1,450, it goes into your sample. And so on until you've selected 500 files. That's what's called simple random sampling. It will give you a representative type of sample. So here in this scenario, you could probably do that because you've got all files and all 5,000 of the children who use the program. You want to pick 500 out of those 5,000. Those files are all probably, we said they already have numbers associated with them. You could probably do simple random sampling to get 500 children out of that group of 5,000 that you have information on. So you could use simple random. Sometimes you don't have those files. Sometimes you don't have that list. So instead, if you had a situation where you had a local health clinic that provided services on a completely anonymous basis, I mean, they didn't track records at all, they didn't have any numbers attached with patients, it was completely anonymous. What you might have to do as a researcher is you might have to physically position yourself outside the clinic. And then maybe every 10th person who comes out of the clinic, you would ask them to participate in your research. So you'd be thinking every 10th person. That's a type of sampling that's known as systematic. Another type of probability design, but it's what's known as a systematic type of sampling. Our system is that we're picking every 10th person, or every 15th person, or every 20th person. The difference between the two is simple random sampling can work if you have a list to begin with. It's what in sampling we call a sampling frame. So if you have a list of the people in your population, a sampling frame, you can probably do simple random sampling. If you don't have that list, you don't have that sampling frame, then you might want to be more systematic in the way in which you select individuals. Select every 10th or every 20th or every 30th person. And there are a lot of other examples of probability types of designs. I don't know. It's a lot of information to go through in one night. But let me expose you to one more probability design in case you haven't heard of it before. And that's a third type, which is what's called cluster. Sorry, that's a U. C-L-U-S-T-E-R. Cluster sampling. And I just mentioned cluster sampling because it's something that's done a lot by governments in this country. We have an organization, the U.S. Census Bureau, and you may have used information from the Census Bureau before. Census Bureau does a lot of our counting. You know, it counts the number of people, number of governments, amount of money governments spend, you know, what occupations people have, how much they earn in income. All those types of studies are done by the U.S. Census Bureau. Every 10 years, it has to actually count the number of people in the United States, actually literally do a head count. And so every household will get a census survey. And the household will have to fill out the survey, how many people live there, their income level, all that information. You get that once every 10 years here in the U.S. In between those 10-year periods of time, the Census Bureau collects a lot of other information. And when it collects its information, it usually uses what's called cluster sampling. Here's an example of how cluster sampling might work, and it probably wouldn't be appropriate for this scenario. But let's say that you wanted to collect information on households in the state of California. You probably don't have a list of every single household in the state of California. It's just, the state's too big. It doesn't exist. So you don't have any list to start with. What you could do is use cluster sampling. So what you can do is start out with a cluster at the county level. So out of all the counties in California, we're going to randomly select 10 counties. In each one of those randomly selected counties, we are then going to select, we'll say, 10 cities. So from Los Angeles County, if it got selected, we'll select 10 cities from Los Angeles County. If Ventura County was one of the randomly selected counties, we'll select 10 cities out of Ventura County. So you go from the county level to the city level. For each of those cities that you have now randomly selected, you will then select a sample of streets within those cities. So maybe we'll select 10 streets within each of those 10 cities that we've selected. For each of those streets, we'll then select 10 households on each one of those streets. That's what's called cluster sampling. You start at the county level, you go to the city level, you then go to the street level, you then go to the household level, and now you've collected your data at the level you wanted to, which was the household level. You didn't have a list of households to start with. You constructed that list by going through this cluster type of approach. That's known as cluster sampling. Now again, that probably wouldn't be applicable here. Wouldn't make a lot of sense in this scenario. There could be some scenarios where it does make sense. And where it would make the most sense is if you have a very large geographic area and you don't have a list at the unit of analysis that you're interested in. So like we said here, we didn't have a list of households in California. So we had to make that list ourselves by going through this type of cluster approach. But that's just yet another example of what we call a probability type of design. What ties all those three probability designs, and there are more, but ties those probability designs together is random selection. They all use some type of random selection. Simple random is the most random, but all three of them use some type of random selection in putting together their samples. And that's what makes them probability types of design. So here, I think you probably, again, pun intended, would want to use a probability type of design. Here, what you would probably say is, just to make it more limited, we want to see if this program is effective at reducing childhood obesity for the 5,000 children who are participating in the program. If that's what you want to do, you can certainly use probability type of sampling. You can use simple random sampling. Again, take your 5,000 files, randomly select 500 of them, you've done simple random sampling. There's a very good chance that those 500 files that you've selected are representative of the 5,000 total because you have selected them in a random way. That's what the randomization gives you, is it will give you a representative type of sample.
So usually in comprehensive exam, the probability design would work?
Probably. Maybe not always, but if not, you'll know very clearly that it won't, because I'll use certain words like, this is an exploratory study. And I would say, this is an exploratory study, mm-hmm. or this is the first time that this agency has asked this question. Mm-hmm. That would probably clue you into maybe not probability. Because in very exploratory, very early stages of research, you may not want to put all the effort and the money into being probability. Mm-hmm. You may want to use more of a non-probability design. So, for example, you know, convenience sampling. That's a non-probability type of sampling design. So if I want to know what MPPA students think about research methods as a core class, I'll never ask that because I don't want to know the answer, but I want to know what MPPA students think about research methods as a core. If I'm teaching a research methods class one night and I have 20 people in the room, I'll ask those 20 people what they think about research methods as a course. They're convenient to me. They're in front of me on a Monday or Tuesday night. That's why I select them. That's a non-probability type of design. It's convenient sampling. I don't know that those 20 students who are sitting in front of me that evening are representative of all the students in the program. They may be. They may not be. I have no idea. I have no clue whether or not they are. So I can't really say that they represent the entire MPPA student body. That's not probability. That's not random. I'm not selecting them randomly. I'm selecting them because they're sitting in front of me on Monday night. Another example of a non-probability type of design is what we call purposive or judgmental sampling. Purposive or judgmental sampling is when the researcher himself or herself feels that he or she knows who belongs in the sample. He or she knows who best represents the population. So I would say, well, you know, I know the students in the MPPA program pretty well, so I'm going to go and find 20 MPPA students who I think pretty much represent the entire MPPA student body.